This is the Project Management Podcast. We bring project management topics to beginners and experts. Find us on the web at www.thepmpodcast.com or send your emails to pmpodcast@gmail.com. Hello and welcome to episode number 97. I am Cornelius Fichtner. This is the Project Management Podcast for the 31st of May, 2008. Nice to have you with us. Have you ever managed a project where everything was either black or white, yes or no, approved or not approved, good or bad? Well, you probably haven't. If your projects are like mine, then most decisions that you make on these projects are compromises. You give a little here, you take a little there. In project management, nothing is really ever black and white. So, don't adjust your project plan, for you have now entered the grey areas. And Managing the Grey Areas is the title of the new book written by Jerry Manis, who joins us on the podcast today to talk about these grey areas and all the trade-offs that we project managers have to make every single day. Today's episode is sponsored by Spark Internet Marketing, a full-service premium internet marketing firm offering search engine optimization and pay-per-click services to customers across North America. Our number one priority is to grow your business by leveraging the internet to bring you qualified leads at rates lower than traditional advertising mediums. We deliver quality work and fully explain our efforts to you on a monthly basis. Visit SparkInternetMarketing.com and sign up for a free website performance report and 60-minute personalized discovery session. Got a couple of announcements for you. Then we have a new gizmo that I'd like to introduce you to. That then is followed by our main topic, the discussion with Jerry Manis. And because we are having an author on the program today, that means we are giving away two of his books. Jerry has donated two of his books, Managing the Grey Areas, to our listeners. As always, one of these goes to the listeners of our premium podcast, fully automatically, and the other one you're going to have to send me an email if you would like to participate in that giveaway. You have to send that email to me by the 11th of June, 2008. In the subject, simply write the word gray, G-R-A-Y, and in the body of the email, put your name and the town and country where you're writing from, and you will be entered into that giveaway for Jerry Manis's book, Managing the Gray Areas. And at this point, I'd like to encourage you to become a premium subscriber to the podcast. As a premium subscriber, you will not only and automatically get enrolled in all our giveaways, we also currently give you one premium episode with every free episode, so you get twice the information about project management. Oh, and of course, you also help us to be able to keep this program going. And now our gizmo of the day. I would like to introduce you to a new project management-related podcast. It is called PIMPOD, Der Deutsche Projektmanagement Podcast. And, oh yes, it's in German. And to talk to us about the PIMPOD, here is the host, Sebastian Stücker. Hallo Sebastian und herzlich willkommen zum Podcast.
Hallo Cornelius, freut mich hier zu sein.
What are you planning to achieve by producing a podcast in German?
As you know, I'm involved a lot in PMI and I've also the PMP for about 1 year now. And the reason for creating a German podcast, which is mostly about the PMI project management world, if you will, I want to bring PMI topics, for example, the PIMBOK guide itself, better to German listeners. While the number of PMI members in Germany is already increasing rapidly, I meet a lot of people in my professional life complaining that they have difficulties to get into this topic because the PIMBOK itself is difficult to read. And for example, the German translation is not... No, it's not perfect, okay? Especially the specific terms used are nearly impossible to translate for some examples. And therefore, I try to discuss those topics in a more practical way to bring it better to German listeners and to increase the perception in Germany of what is project management really all about. Well, and secondly, there are so many podcasts for the topic in English as well. I just thought, why not create a German one? And at the end, it's also having a lot of fun doing podcasting. I love it.
So if I understand you correctly, then you're taking the PMBOK guide and you're sort of applying it to everyday project management. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm trying to combine it with my professional experience in the projects I'm doing. And also, I try to discuss it a little bit against other standards, for example, the IPMA world.
What do you hope that your listeners will learn by listening to your podcast?
At the beginning, as I said, I've currently the podcast is definitely the discussion of the PMBOK guide. So I try to explain the guide in a podcast format. But as I said, I do not strictly discuss the content. So what they will not learn is, for example, that they are going to prepare for the PMP exam. Because I don't discuss every 100% of the PMBOK guide. And since I'm, for example, involved in the PMI certification for the writing of PMP items, I'm not even authorized to prepare. So I think there is already a good podcast out there doing this.
What other topics do you discuss other than the PMBOK guide?
The PMBOK guide is for around 50%. So every other episode, I'm doing the PMBOK guide. And in the other episodes, I am trying to do interviews with mostly German people from the project management world about interesting topics, current trends, current developments in project management.
And how long are your episodes?
For the PMBOK guide episodes, I try to stay in a 20-25 minutes block. So I think this is something which can be easily consumed during break time or so. However, for some interviews, the episodes might get longer. If I have a really good interview guest, I set the priority on the quality of the talk, and I do not like to cut the time then. So my longest episode for now is around 40 minutes.
Is it going to be just in German, or are you having English interviews as well?
It is mostly planned to be in German, but there is currently already one episode, which is episode number 4, which is in English. So not only the interview is in English, but the whole episode. So that this is understandable for an international audience as such. And this is about project blame management, the 10th knowledge area for the PMBOK. So maybe in the future I will do other English interviews, but for now it's mostly in German.
All right. Finally, please tell our listeners the URL where they can find and subscribe to your program.
So the URL is www.pimpod.de. This is PMPOD.de.
Excellent. Sebastian, thank you very much for your time today.
It was a pleasure being with you. Thank you.
And here is our Gizmos disclaimer. We do not endorse the gizmos that we present in this segment. We just want to tell you that they exist. Use your own judgment. The companies and individuals who are presenting a gizmo here do not pay us for the privilege. And by the way, you will hear Sebastian again in a few days. He has produced an episode on project blame management, which is in English. And we are going to feature this episode of the PIM Pod here on the Project Management Podcast. There is nothing you have to do. It'll come your way fully automatically. And now our main topic, the discussion on managing the grey areas with Jerry Manis. Jerry Manis is the author of Napoleon on Project Management and Managing the Grey Areas. He's president of the Marengo Group and co-founder of PMThink.com, a popular project management blog. His work has been cited by management guru Tom Peters and highlighted in a variety of publications, including Leadership Excellence, The National Post, The Globe and Mail, The Chicago Sun-Times, and The Houston Chronicle. Jerry is a PMP and provides principle-based leadership and project management training. He has worked with a wide range of organizations, from small domestic businesses to international Fortune 500 companies. He also helped lead over 400 volunteers in the creation of the Project Management Institute's Global Standard for Program and Portfolio Management and currently serves on the board of directors for PMI's Aerospace and Defense SIG. He also contributed to PMI's Organizational Project Management Maturity Model OPM3. So here's Jerry Manis on Managing the Gray Areas.
The Project Management Podcasts. Feature interview. Today with Jerry Manis, PMP and author of Managing the Gray Areas.
Hello, Jerry, and thank you for coming back onto the Project Management Podcast.
Thanks, Cornelius. Always good to be here.
Thank you. Your new book is out. It is titled Managing the Gray Areas, and it's published by RMC Publications. Now, the first thing I have to ask you, of course, is what are gray areas?
Well, it's funny. When I was writing the book, I was spending all this time, and my wife was very upset when I came out with this, because this whole time she thought I was writing on managing the gray hairs. So,
that would be a bestseller, I can tell you.
That probably would be. But at any rate, the gray areas, I would say the gray areas are when we face these situations that are right versus right, where there's no clear answer or uncertain. And then there's a statement I use in a lot of my presentations with Winston Churchill. I thought he had a great statement. He said, "True genius resides in the evaluation of uncertain, hazardous, or conflicting information." And I think that's what we face every day in the project management field. That's what it's all about.
Okay. And how did you go from writing about Napoleon on project management over to talking about the gray areas?
Well, it is a big jump. And after I wrote Napoleon, and I felt, I said what I felt I had to say in terms of the project management and in terms of Napoleon's uniqueness. I thought he made a unique character in that he had such amazing success, plus he documented all of it, plus he had all the principles that we can apply, and then he lost it all. I thought there's a lot to be learned from both on how he achieved that and how he lost it all. And after that, I was trying to figure out, okay, who else can I talk about that's achieved excellence or greatness that we can learn from, but not say the same thing? So I didn't want to rehash the same territory. I've been there, done that. Somebody suggested Caesar, and I thought, Caesar did achieve great things. I was doing some additional research on that, but then I didn't necessarily like what he stood for, and I didn't think there's a lot of good lessons to learn there. So the fact is, finding somebody that was relevant and that made sense. And there are a few others, in some cases, people had already written books that I felt had covered the territory. And, I was weighing different ideas. And then it was when I was doing a seminar, and it was called the Leadership Quadrant. And the quadrant was what we called 4 P's for organizational excellence. And it was principles, people, productivity, and process. And I did that with a guy named Jerome Jewell, who's a productivity consultant. He was my first teacher at the American Management Association. And we kept in touch over the years, and I know he did seminars, so our careers kind of went in parallel paths, so we decided to do one together. So we had people from criminal intelligence, from manufacturing, from healthcare, about as diverse as you could get. And we incorporated these events from the Constitution Center where it was held. It was at the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia. And they had an interactive presentation called Freedom Rising, and it talked about how the country struggled to hold its principles together and figure out what are its principles and all the debates they had. So we included that in the program, and then it led to a bunch of open discussion. And we always like to include open discussion in these seminars. And, some of the things we were trying to talk about, like, always share the big picture with everybody and always do this and always do that and systemic thinking. For almost everything we talked about, there was an exception. And we came up with this list of all these gray areas. And, in fact, during that seminar, I said to Jerome, I said, here's my next book. This is going to be it. And that's what I did. I started researching the most polarizing issues.
Okay. And why is it important for a project manager to know these gray areas and also be able to manage the gray areas?
I think the basic thing is to be able to make better decisions from broader perspectives. And I think that's the thing. Project managers need to make decisions every day. And they're right in the middle of it between the organization and the people on the project team and trying to satisfy both and trying to motivate and encourage people to achieve objectives amid all this adversity. And so to be able to make decisions in the thick of it, like Winston Churchill said, I think that's the role of the project manager.
Okay, so that's the reason why we should be managing them. So let's go to the other extreme. What happens if a project manager does not address the gray areas on a project?
I think if they don't address these areas, what they end up doing, and I've seen this a lot, is they end up making short-sighted assumptions. So they make assumptions that are basically wrong. By following some chosen path that's the norm. So by following that, they're making some wrong assumptions. They can also destroy morale in the process, and they can sabotage their own career by making some of these wrong, short-sighted decisions. So the idea is to be able to look at things in a broader perspective and in a broader way. And that was a lot of the themes that we talked about at the leadership seminar. By the way, we're doing another one this year in October, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yes.
I'm sure probably we'll have more gray areas.
And while we're talking about this, the listeners of the Project Management Podcast do receive a 10% discount on that. And I believe all they have to do is write to you and tell you that they're a listener of the Project Management Podcast. They want to attend your seminar, and I'd like to get 10% discount, right?
Right, absolutely.
Okay, and we're still talking about the gray areas, and when we're talking about the color gray, we have to, is it a color? I don't even know. We have to acknowledge that there is black, there is white, and that there are many, many shades of gray in between those two extremes.
Right.
Does your book address the shades, the black, the white, or are you really just focusing on the gray?
Well, actually, I think in order to understand the gray, we need to understand the black and the white. I think we need to understand both sides. And when I picked these issues, what I felt were the most polarizing issues, where people are basically split, and you can make an equal case for either side of these different issues, I think it's important to really delve into both sides from different perspectives. So I did that. In the book, for each gray area, I make a case for one side, and then just when somebody thinks, oh, well, there's the answer, like most people do, I then make a case for the other side. And then people aren't so sure. And then I try to make a case for tools and techniques and thought leadership. Well, how do we reconcile these two? How do we address both? And I think that's something that's been lacking. I think people just latch on to the nearest side because it makes things easier and simpler. And sometimes we get misled that way.
Okay, so let's jump in and let's take a look at these polarizing issues. Your book touches upon seven of these areas, and we'll go through all seven of them, and I'd appreciate it if you could give us sort of an idea of how these would influence a project and how we would need to manage them on a project. The first one in the book is individual needs versus organizational goals.
And I would say when I wrote the book, I didn't even write it with project management in mind per se, but I think a lot of it applies directly to project managers. So this is a general leadership book that I think applies, after all, project management is really people management, and it's leading people. So I think the same things apply.
Thank you. That's what I always say.
Okay.
The P in PM stands for people management.
Yeah, I think that's that can steer people in a more focused direction if we realize that. But individual needs versus organizational goals, we deal with that every day in projects we have organizational goals we have to meet. And we have certain methods, organizational methods and processes and things like that. And then we have these individuals on our team, and they each have individual needs and individual strengths. And we need to balance both and cater to both. One example, for instance, is if an organization cuts your project plan in half and says, okay, now get this done in half the time, we have an obligation not to burn out our people and also to defend the right plan. Sometimes there's something has to be done by a certain time or the project won't achieve its benefits. There might be other creative methods. And there's other issues too. Is you're trying to meet somebody's need. They need to take off, or they need to attend this to a family matter. And then you have your project goals you're also trying to meet. So you need to balance these. In the book, I talk about a model I call holistic ethics. And there are three classic ethics models. There are the values approach or virtue approach. This is what values drive me. Then there's the consequentialists that say, okay, what are the results going to be for the many versus the few? And then there are people who look at grand principles. And so there's a lot of harm, I think, that's been done. It's not as easy as it seems, because there's a lot of questions we need to ask around those. Like, right according to whom? We say, okay, what's right? Well, depends on who you are. And am I obligated to my people, my company, or both equally? And the big question is, what if satisfying one causes damage to the other? What if by satisfying a person, I'm causing harm to the company? Or by satisfying the company, I'm causing harm to people? Can I rely on my values then, and how aligned are my values with my organization? Sometimes it takes trade-offs, and there's a lot of questions. There's a book called Defining Moments by Joseph Badaracco. I discovered that when I was three-quarters finished the book, but there's some gems in there, I think, that were showed me I was heading down the right path. But he calls these defining moments. You know, a lot of times there's different directions we can take, and it defines who we are and who we choose to be. So that's just, you know, one of the gray areas.
I think what you have just said really shows how gray these areas are. I think if people haven't understood what you meant by gray areas, this explanation of individual needs versus organizational goals, that you have to really figure out where to go, where do you put priorities, that is what managing the gray areas means.
Yeah. I give you a quick example. I just did a presentation about the 300 people, and I painted a picture of process-oriented people that say process is everything. If you have the right process, you could hire chimpanzees, and they'll be able to still do the right job. And then there's engagement-oriented people that says just pick the right people, communicate your principles, and get out of the way. You know, just let them do their thing. And I asked for a show of hands of which, you know, how many people side with either, and it was split 50-50 right down the middle. So I think that's, you know, shows that there's the gray areas in between of being able to integrate both.
Yeah, not surprising, not surprising.
Yeah.
The next area, the second of your seven gray areas, is generalists versus specialists. What do you have to say about that?
That's another case where in staffing a project team, classically been two schools of thought. You know, one is just get, you know, specialists at everything and have them, you know, like in an assembly line, everybody do their own thing. And people tend to misunderstand the whole strengths. You know, you still want to like build a team around people's strengths, but that doesn't mean they're pigeonholed into, you know, individual roles. But then there's people that think, okay, let's get all generalists or people that can do everything because we can't afford specialists. And again, you see these two people look at one side or the other, and they both have blind spots. You know, like generalists have had broad exposure, and this broad exposure makes them better at initial diagnosis of problems when you're trying to look something down. They have a broader lens. But they tend to miss details. And the specialists, because of repetition and building that strength over time, they've built a lot of depth, and they tend to be better at implementation. So the idea is we need to figure out how do we best leverage the generalists on our team. Where do we need this broad diagnosis, and where do we need specific skills, and then have them work together? And then how do we leverage them? Like, can we leverage generalists to address gaps across specialists, or to manage handoffs, or to create more cohesiveness, especially, you know, customer facing. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of these things to think about. We need to think about what are the blind spots across generalists and specialists.
Yeah, I also think this translates very well into project management, because every project manager is both a generalist and a specialist at the same time, because you have your project management expertise, which gives you a general way of managing projects, but you're a specialist in your field, in the particular field that you're in, whether it's IT or construction or healthcare, that's your specialty. So this is something that each project manager knows from within themselves and should be able to manage and apply on the team as well. Absolutely.
And I think that makes the project manager's job that much harder, because they tend to view, because organizations look at somebody as you have to be a generalist and a specialist, and it's very hard to go broad and deep to the point where if you do one, you're going to sacrifice the other, which is why I usually make a case for having a project manager be more of a generalist and then getting the people on your team to cover certain specialties like project administration. A lot of project managers, they get, you know, bogged down in administration and, you know, managing the plan and the details. If they had a project administrator, the project manager can focus on being more of a facilitator and communicator, which is where I think they need to focus.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the third gray area that you mentioned. And I think you've already touched a little bit upon that, and that's the big picture versus the narrow focus.
Yeah. There's two schools of thought here, too. I mean, again, I would predict that you probably have a 50-50 split on this. You know, you hear people talk about you need to share the big picture. Everybody needs to understand what the big picture is, because if they understand the big picture, they'll understand their piece of it. You know, it's like the old three stone cutters where, you know, the first one's working on the, making the best stone he can, and the second one is just trying to do a job, do his job and do the best job he can on it. But the third one understands that he's building a cathedral, so he understands what the purpose is. It's like, I'm sure I botched that, but there's different variations of it. But the thing is, the big picture is important. People need to understand context, and I think that's the word, is context. But on the other hand, simplicity is important, because if you tell people too many things, they're going to remember nothing. A lot of times you see people start a project or launch a PMO or something, and they send an email that says 150 things, and people either drag it in the trash, or the poor souls that do read it maybe remember one thing out of it, if any. So the fact is, people do need to focus, and they need to have a focus message. So how do you integrate these two things? So the big question to ask around this issue is, how do I communicate with both simplicity and context? And there's a few tools. I think roadmaps always help. And I shouldn't say always, because roadmaps sometimes help. Sometimes there's things you don't want to share. It's not fleshed out yet. It could lead people thinking in the wrong direction. So a medium-term plan, at least, is usually good. But the messages, like in the Napoleon book, when he communicated when he first took over his first consul of France, he didn't talk about all the things he was going to do in terms of the financial reforms and education reforms. First, he announced the Constitution. Then he announced the financial reforms he was going to be working on. But each of these things was piecemeal. Now, he had the whole roadmap in his mind, but he communicated each of these one at a time and got people bought in and sold on them. And I think there's no right answer. I think it depends on the situation.
Mm-hmm. And I think that the fourth of those seven gray areas, structure versus flexibility, is very, very closely related to the big picture versus narrow focus, isn't it?
It is related. The big picture versus narrow focus, to me, is more about communication. And the structure versus flexibility, although all of these kind of interrelate, but I think the structure versus flexibility is a matter of process, process versus freedom. And I think in this case, it's a matter of integrating both principles and process, and what's the right level. For instance, and especially when we're leading people, how do people feel like they have to follow these rigid methodologies? And there, it's very relevant to project management. In the book, I talk about the child psychologist, Saul Fisher, and he talks about there's three different types of parents. And he says there's your jellyfish that just roll over and whatever happens. And then there's a steel rod that's unbendable. And then there's a backbone that's flexible but supportive. And that's where we need to focus. But the thing is, sometimes we create these one-size-fits-all methodologies, and it becomes like a steel rod, and it takes people's focus away from what really counts. So even Peter Schultes, who's the king of quality and standardization, even he says that standardization, we need to be careful there, because there's a gray area, so to speak, because you want to standardize, but the fact is you don't want to create a stifling environment. So he suggests, number one, engaging people, and I think engagement is a key theme here, engaging people in what needs to be standardized, and then not standardizing everything, but start with the most important things that everybody agrees, this has to be standardized and something that will help across the board, and focus on those things. But then allow some room for freedom, and also allow some room for satisfying customers. Some of the greatest organizations, Four Seasons, for instance, the hotel chain, Disney, Men's Warehouse, some of these companies that are customer-focused give their employees the freedom to do things to focus on the customer, even if it means bypassing the rules or doing things a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. And it really pays off.
And I think the next gray area, the vigilance versus delegation, plays nicely into that.
It does. It's very closely related. In fact, I think this is another combination where structure and flexibility is talking about principles and process. The vigilance versus delegation talks about how much freedom we give people. And so, and to me, here it's a balance of trust and situational coaching, because we need to be able to have this engagement and trust. But then some people are going to need some coaching. We have to realize that, but it depends on the situation. I say situational because it's not even the person. Somebody could need coaching in one area and not need coaching in another. And the best model I've seen for that is the old Hersey Blanchard model, the situational leadership. I talk about that in the book as well. But a good example here is, and what really turned me onto this idea is reading about Best Buy's model called ROWE, or R-O-W-E, and it stands for Results-Only Work Environment. And what they did is they found a way to balance vigilance and delegation. What they did was they focus on outcomes. They focus on results, and that's what they measure. They don't care the time people spend, if you work 40 hours a week, 2 hours a week, 80 hours a week. They focus on getting agreement and very clear agreement on what the outcomes each person needs to provide in line with the outcomes of the project or what it is you're trying to achieve. And they focus on those outcomes and were those outcomes met. If they weren't met, why not? It's not like a punishing thing like the old management by objective. It was misapplied. It wasn't even how Drucker meant it. But it's more of saying, what are the objectives? Let's get agreement on them. Let's communicate when we feel the objectives aren't going to be met and try to rectify it and focus there. Not focus, you know, somebody could go to the movies on a Wednesday and go golfing on a Thursday and, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. The thing is, we're focusing on the objectives and what has to be accomplished. And I think there's a lot of sense in that. So you put structure around the outcomes and around the objectives, around the actions. These people are the experts. They all have different working styles, different methods. That's where more of the freedom needs to be. And organizations have a hard time with that. Mm-hmm. I think the more time we spend focusing on time and getting visibility of these things, we're fooling ourselves.
The sixth of your seven gray areas is appearance versus substance. Now, how did that come in there? How did that come to be in there?
Yeah, that's, you know, when I was going over the different gray areas, that one's a little bit of a different animal in some of them. But a lot of people, again, from talking to different managers, I hear two general schools of thought. And one says, if you focus on creating the right appearance, if you focus on looking good, then eventually you'll become good. You'll actually believe the appearance. And same thing with your products. If you focus on design, and no doubt we're entering the age of design with Samsung and Apple. You know, that's all you have to look at to tell that. And this design creates this image of quality because perception is reality. But then there's substance. There's, okay, well, on behind that you need the substance. And then there's people that say if you focus on being good and doing the right things and quality, then eventually you'll look good. And then what if you need to make a trade-off where trade-offs are needed? So let's say you're trying to implement software systems. Do you focus on, and you only have a certain amount of money, do you focus on the CRM, the customer relationship management system that will address your appearance to the customer? Do you focus on your back-end systems that make sure you get all the back-end systems and quality worked out, and then, you know, later on you can worry about, you know, the appearance? So a lot of this again becomes a gray area, and we need to find ways to integrate both. The fact is, both statements are true. Looking good can cause people to be good, and being good can cause people to look good. So it's a virtuous circle. But the minute we sacrifice one area, one of those, that can quickly become a vicious circle. So I think people tend to not spend enough time on giving people the image of looking good and being good. Very quickly, there was an experiment called the Hawthorne Experiment. It was a division of GE, and they were trying to measure productivity. And they realized suddenly that, you know what, these people are all performing well because they're being watched. So the act of observing changed the observed. So then they tweaked the experiment a little bit. They started getting people involved in research projects and treating them as if they were research scientists by giving them things to do that were, you know, important research projects. And they realized by viewing these people as research scientists, they were actually producing results that were as good, if not better, than some of the trained research scientists, which was staggering. These were factory people. So there's a lot to be said for appearance.
Interesting. Hawthorne. Yeah. Never heard of that before.
Yeah, I think by creating the right image for our project team and our project, people will live up to that image.
Interesting. I've heard of the fact before that when you're watching something, the actual watching or measuring changes what you're watching or measuring. That's I think that's a commonplace.
Yeah.
The last of your seven gray areas is one that has been talked about and written about in, I would say, probably hundreds of books. Centralization versus decentralization.
Yes, and anybody that's been in business for more than probably 3 years has seen the pendulum go back and forth several times.
Yes.
And this is another case where I think where we're headed is that we need to integrate both. And what I call the hybrid organization, and different books have written about it in different flavors. There was a book, The Starfish and the Spider, that talks about it, and that's an excellent book as well. Franz Trompenaar is a culture guru. He talks about that. In fact, Franz Trompenaar has a great story that perfectly, to me, exemplifies this perfectly. He talks about Heineken beer. They were running a commercial ad, and the idea was the theme was beer is meant to be, and the whole concept is it's supposed to portray Heineken as taking somebody from a stressed to a relaxed state. So they created a commercial where a woman was going frantically through her closet, throwing clothes back and forth and whatnot, and she's frantic because she has a date. And the doorbell rings, and her boyfriend shows up and throws her a leather jacket. In the next scene, you see them both in the bar relaxing, wearing jeans and a leather jacket and drinking Heineken. And it says, beer is meant to be. Well, certain countries, the commercial did horribly, and other ones it did very well. And they were wondering, you know, in the countries where it did horribly, what was the reason? So they surveyed people. And what people, the message people took in those countries where it didn't do well, Greece, for instance, was one of them, was that only slobs drink Heineken. So I don't think that was a message they were trying to convey.
Yes.
So what they did, and this is ingenious, and I think it's relevant to project management and PMOs and a lot of things that we try to structure, is that they came up with a new approach. They said, this time, we're going to have the same theme, taken from a stressed to relaxed state, but we're going to create these hubs throughout Europe where each country can create their own commercial as long as it supports that theme. So it pushes it out to the experts. It's decentralized, but with a centralized theme. And that worked great. And then they also did the same thing in the Caribbean, except the theme there was, and again, it's catering to the region. The theme there was they wanted to portray Heineken as a metropolitan beer. And in each country or each island, we gave their own local flair to it. And this whole concept worked great. And it's very similar to what the Veterans Health Administration did when they turned that hospital system around from last to first. And they're undoubtedly first in terms of every metric that measures health care. Now, they have their own issues now, but that's besides the point. They created these regional hubs, and the regional hubs focused on that region, and the central body, Washington, instead of being a center of bureaucracy, they became a change agent. They were able to support change, to do knowledge distribution, by learning from the different local bodies and then distributing that to the other local bodies, they became a knowledge broker. So in a hybrid organization, the central body becomes a knowledge broker. It focuses on principles, support, tools, things like that. But the decentralized body is where all the action happens and the localized decision-making happens. And the more we can focus on that, whether we're structuring PMOs, organizations, I think that we're better off. We need to find ways to integrate centralization and decentralization.
Wonderful. So those were your seven gray areas that we looked at. Let's go through them again. Individual needs versus organizational goals, generalists versus specialists, big picture versus narrow focus, structure versus flexibility, vigilance versus delegation, appearance versus substance, and centralization versus decentralization. Are there any more? And why did you not talk about them?
Well, I think there's loads more. And those were the, out of the people that I discussed this with, and I sent out surveys, I spoke with people, clients, I spoke with fellow consultants, and then plus the people at this, at the Leadership Quadrant seminar, and everything seemed to narrow down. I did a mind map, and I try to map all the different issues, and these were categories that I mapped things. That's not to say there aren't others. I think that every day we face or gray areas, and I'm trying to keep a running list, but I think these were the key ones, but no doubt there are more may or may not be categorized by these.
All right. In closing, do you have any advice for project managers on how to identify and deal with the gray areas on their projects?
So I think there's four things that I would suggest. One is to focus on, well, obviously keep an open mind, understand that things, the relationships to others, and nothing happens in isolation, and then ask the right questions. If I were to boil this down to four things, I would say, think about ideals. What are your ideals? Think about questions. What questions do I have to ask? Think about the variables at play. And then finally, think about what opposing views may exist. And, you know, stretch yourself. Try to make a case for the opposing view also. So then you can really make broader decisions. So think about ideals, questions, variables, and the opposing views. And I think that those four things will really help you when you're faced with these gray areas.
All right. Once again, the book is called Managing the Gray Areas. It is written by Jerry Manis and published by RMC Publications. Jerry, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And that was our interview with Jerry Manis. Here's what I would like to know from you. Jerry introduced us today to the seven gray areas. Shall we see how many more gray areas we can add to his list? Please stop by at our website and post a reply to this as a comment to episode number 97. That's it for today. Thank you very much for listening. As always, you can find us on the web at thepmpodcast.com, and if you are a PM who wants to become PMP certified, you can visit pmprepcast.com. In our sister podcast, we teach you concepts, tools, and techniques that you need to know in order to pass the PMP exam. Please send your emails to pmpodcast@gmail.com, and when you write, please tell me where in the world you are writing from. And by the way, before I forget, we also have an affiliate program for the PM Prepcast. So if you would like to become an affiliate reseller of the PM Prepcast, then please go to www.pmprepcast.com/affiliates. And finally, we have this. From my upcoming book titled The Dictionary of Fake Project Management Terms, we look at the definition of the term chat session. It's a noun. A chat session, which is spelled J-A-T session, stands for Joint Application Thrashing Session, and describes the gathering of two or more end users of a newly installed computer system with the purpose of discussing all of the system's shortcomings. Example, the bitterness in their voices made it clear their lunch had turned into a chat session. Until next time.
Today with Jerry Manis, PMP, author of Managing the Gray Areas. Just not happy with it. Okay.